യോഗേന ചിത്തസ്യ പദേന വാചാം മലം ശരീരസ്യ ച വൈദ്യകേന യോപാകരോത്തം പ്രവരം മുനീനാം പതഞ്ജലിം പ്രാഞ്ജലിരാനതോസ്മി സ്തുവേ പതഞ്ജലിം വ്യാസം ശങ്കരം ച മുനിത്രയം കർത്തൃസൂത്രസ്യ ഭാഷ്യസ്യ ക്രമാത് വിവരണസ്യ ച. Now we'll resume our discussion from where we left in the session just before the beginning of the summer recess. So please remember, we were dealing with the sadhana pada, that is the second chapter in the printed version of this book. Now I mentioned earlier there are three main topics discussed in the sadhana pada, which means you find in the English translation the means, that comes in the second chapter. The first topic is kriya yoga, as it is called. It's called kriya yoga, which is a discussion of the five kleshas that we discussed: avidya, smita, raga, dvesha, abhinivesha. The analysis of human mind, obstructions that we face in spiritual life, then the modifications, and also the accumulated tendencies and impressions that remain in the mind, which cause repetition of action and also influence or determine our future life. All this we discussed. Now we are beginning a discussion on the second main topic of sadhana pada. It is called dukkha chaturvyuha. That is the technical name, dukkha chaturvyuha. You can say the quadrangle of dukkha. Four fundamental principles based on the idea that there is something imperfect in the ordinary worldly life and experiences that we encounter in our life. As we discuss the further chapter, it becomes clear. Now, this quadrangle of dukkha, or the four fundamental principles of dukkha, one is called heya, that which is to be eradicated, the future dukkha. Now, what is dukkha? To be very frank, to give a simple description, when we reach a particular stage of cultural evolution, not necessarily spiritual evolution, refinement of taste, temperament, evolution of our mind, as we become more evolved culturally and of course spiritually, we want to go beyond the present state of affairs. Now, this thirst for transcending the present state of imperfection depends upon our own stage of evolution. That's why when we first discuss yoga, Atha Yoga Anushasanam, this is the first sutra of the Samadhipada. When do we start yoga? When we experience dukkha. Dukkha, literally it means grief, sorrow. But it should not be understood in that limited sense. When we feel a need to evolve to a higher level of consciousness, cultural consciousness, to a higher level of refinements, then we want to leave something behind, we want to transcend something. So we feel there is something imperfect. Our present state of affairs is a state of imperfection. In fact, that is one sign of a cultured, civilized person. So sorrow or grief is not something that we should be worried about. If you don't have a sense of grief in this sense, then you are either a great saint or you are a mere brute. That's what it means. That's what yoga means. If we do not feel that our present state of affairs is not perfect, there are still many higher levels of evolution that we can have a higher level of consciousness, a higher level of sublimation of our desires, ambitions, views, and targets and goals in life. Either we are brutes or we are great mystics or saints. So, yoga, the first sutra of yoga, Atha Yoga Anushasanam. Now, we are going to discuss yoga. That is the meaning of this sutra. When do we discuss yoga? When we read books, when we observe things, when we come in contact with higher spiritual ideas, higher cultural ideas, when we have a desire to sublimate our desire or ideas, our goals in life, when we want to move forward, then Atha means now. Now we will discuss yoga. Now, in the particular sutra that we are dealing with, please remember, this sutra is the 15th sutra of Sadhanapada, which in the printed book you find second chapter. It deals with three types of grief of sorrow. A very thorough analysis of the whole dynamics of human existence, human life. Okay, now, so the second main topic of discussion in the Sadhanapada is Dukkha Chaturvyuha. As I said, the quadrangle of Dukkha, the four fundamental principles. First, we want to eradicate Dukkha. And remember, you know, one great man felt this Dukkha. And as a result, we have one of the greatest spiritual ideas in the world, Buddhism. Buddha felt Dukkha. So we got a great spiritual teacher whose influence is still felt all over the world just because he felt Dukkha. So feeling a state of imperfection with our present state of affairs is a sign that we are civilized, that we are refined, we are different from brutes. That's what it means. So the first quadrangle principle is Heya, in Sanskrit terms it's Heya, something that should be eradicated. Future Dukkha should be eradicated. We will discuss that subject. Second principle is Heya Hetuhu, the cause of Dukkha. In the Patanjali system, the association between the seer, the drashta, and the seen, drishya, this is the cause of Dukkha. It is caused by avidya, our present misconception as to what we are. When we encounter different empirical experiences with the mind and the five senses of perception, when we see something, when we hear something, immediately we associate with that object that we see. So we become identified with the emerging mental waves. And this is the cause of grief. Grief here means imperfection. Sometimes we can, from a higher point of view, we can just see, well, I want to be something higher than just an intelligent, civilized brute having all the advantages conferred by modern science and technology. There is something higher that I want to achieve. For that, so when you feel that, you are actually encountering Dukkha. In fact, Patanjali will call it called Parinama Dukkha. So he would say, we'll read it, he would say only a yogi, a wise person, will feel imperfection with the present state of affairs. And that feeling of imperfection takes him all the way to a higher level of consciousness that helps him to transcend the empirical plane of these day-to-day experiences, vagaries of mind, anxieties, all these problems, worries and these problems. The third element of this quadrangle is eradication of dukkha by the eradication of avidya. It means we must achieve the correct knowledge of what we actually are. And the fourth part is the means of eradication of dukkha. That means we'll discuss this later. It is called unbroken practice of viveka khyati. Now, this is, I actually mentioned this in the last class of the previous session. Now we will come to the subject, the sutra that we are going to discuss today. So those of you who have the book, you find it is the 15th sutra of Sadhanapada. In the text that you normally find, it is given as the second chapter. I mentioned earlier, in the Patanjali's system, in its published version, the four chapters are listed like this. The first chapter deals with samadhi, samadhipada, the particular chapter dealing with the higher spiritual consciousness, higher spiritual experience, the transcendental experience. That is the beginning of the text, first chapter. The second chapter is called sadhanapada, the means to achieve this goal. But I have slightly altered that order. I first explained the first 15 sutras of samadhipada because that explains in detail the nature of vrittis, mental modifications and so on. And now we are dealing with the sadhanapada, the means. So the sutra is this: parinama tapa samskara dukkhihi guna vritti virodhaccha dukkhameva sarvam vivekinaha. Okay, the meaning is this: to a person of spiritual refinement, a person of discerning mind, everything is sorrowful in this world. What's the meaning of it? Again, it depends upon our own spiritual evolution. In fact, this higher meaning of this dukkha is not felt for people who have not reached a particular level of refinement. So, vivekinaha, for a person with a proper perspective, for a wise man or wise woman, a spiritual seeker finds this present state of affairs is not really the highest condition of spiritual, of our life. That again depends upon the perspective. Sometimes we reach this feeling of discrimination or discerning mind or spiritual wisdom or maturity when we get some setbacks in life. Near and dear ones pass away, or we lose money in stock exchange, or we lose our job. Sometimes we do our best to get something for the sake of our near, dear friends, but we get the opposite result. So we always feel there is a contradiction between what we expect and what we actually get. The logic of mathematics doesn't operate in life. 2 + 2 = 4 in mathematics, but 2 + 2 = not 4 necessarily in life. You do your best. You give your best. But you get back just the opposite of what you expect. So there is a contradiction. The logic doesn't work here in life. It is only because the logic doesn't operate in life that we turn to yoga. We turn to yoga. We turn to spiritual life. We start reading Bible or Gita. Only when we find there is something going wrong somewhere. If human life could function like a machine which follows a set pattern, a set of laws and regulations, then we won't turn to spirituality. We will not even read higher books, mystical books, philosophy. Why should we read philosophy if everything is all right in this world? So everything is not all right in this world. But what kind of imperfection it is? So Patanjali says there is a higher level of, there's a higher type of discontent, discontentment, dissatisfaction. What is that? That's only a yogi feels. Parinama dukkhata nama pratikula sukhavasthayam api yoginam eva klishnadi. See Vyasa's commentary. That's a Sanskrit commentary. It's very enlightening. Vyasa says, of the three types of dukkha that he mentioned in this, parinama dukkha, tapa dukkha, samskara dukkha. These are the three types of dukkhas. Three types of grief or imperfection or sorrow that he deals with. Of this, parinama dukkha is something which only yogis or spiritually evolved people alone feel. Because what happens to them, they can feel the imperfection of these worldly experiences even before they actually go through them. So they feel dukkha before the dukkha really happens. So there is a distinction. The worldly person enjoys first worldly enjoyments and then suffers. That's the nature of ordinary dukkha. I mean, tapa dukkha and all that. The ordinary person, the worldly person, he leads his life enjoying as much as possible. And then he suffers. So first he enjoys and then he suffers. You know, when does he begin to feel sorrowful? When does he feel the sorrow? When he can no longer enjoy. He doesn't, or she doesn't have the wisdom to understand before he begins to enjoy. He doesn't have the wisdom to understand that worldly enjoyment will come to an end one day, and when it comes to an end, it leads to grief, the opposite of enjoyment, pain. But a yogi suffers now, even when all the pleasures are available to him, even before the pleasure has turned into suffering, because he's intensely aware that ultimately all pleasure will end in suffering. This intense awareness of a yogi is called parinama dukkha. So what is the nature of, what is the distinction between a yogi and a person who doesn't know anything about yoga? What is the distinction between a wise person and a person who doesn't have this wisdom? The wise person feels the sorrow now, even though he is not surrounded by any unpleasant, unhappy conditions. And because he suffers now, he doesn't have to suffer really. So if we can understand that the worldly enjoyments without any spiritual values will one day lead to real suffering, once we understand this, that understanding is a kind of suffering. It means you are recognizing, realizing the reality of suffering of worldly enjoyments, which ultimately it leads to. So when you understand this, it's a kind of suffering. That suffering saves you from real physical suffering. But if you don't understand it, we'll be in for a shock. So it's a very famous statement by Vyasa, who explains the real meaning of parinama dukkha. Means, parinama dukkhata nama pratikula sukhavasthayam abhi yoginam eva klishnati. See, even when he's surrounded by happy situations, even when you have had a good job, money, wealth, everything, still if you have the wisdom to understand, well, this money, wealth, all these things won't last for long. So at that time you realize the reality of suffering. But you are not really suffering, you realize the reality of suffering. That is a wisdom. That's a distinction between a wise person and his opposite. A wise person, he can see from a distance without actually or before encountering the problem, he recognizes the reality of the problem so he can avoid the problem. That's the purpose of yoga. Yoga is in a way a very scientific, rational and psychological medicine for most of the problems you are facing in today's world. Because yoga just gives you red signal so that you can avoid the particular dangerous track. So that's the distinction between a person who is not a yogi and a person who is a yogi. Yogi can realize and recognize the reality of suffering before he actually suffers. So that's the first kind of dukkha, that is parinama dukkha. Now, what is the meaning of this pain and pleasure? Vyasa says, Ya bhogeshu indriyanam triptehi trishnakshayaka upashanti tat sukham Ya indriyanam lavulyat anupashanti tat dukham. So what is dukkha? When through gratification of the thirst for enjoyable things, the senses are calmed, then you feel sukha, but that is what really happens in ordinary world. But in reality, the great philosophers have made one point very clear. You can never really come to a complete satisfaction through enjoying worldly things. It is like trying to put out fire by pouring more and more ghee, me butter, or oil into it. It will become a blazing fire. If you want to put out fire, you want to put something into the fire that puts out the fire. The fire gets extinguished. But if you pour more and more petrol, or in the Sanskrit verse, it is said, if you pour more and more clarified butter, ghee, into fire, to extinguish fire, it doesn't really happen. So trying to imagine or to imagine that one day I will enjoy all that I want and then I will have perfect satisfaction, then I will further evolve, I will enter yoga, it is not going to happen. So there's a famous statement in one of the scriptures. Na jadu kama kamanam upabhogena shamyati havisha krishna vartmeva bhuya eva abhivardhade. It's a famous statement in Sanskrit. The meaning is this. See, desire can never be quenched by pampering our senses, by enjoying desire. If you go on pampering the senses, the desire gets only more inflamed and the fire continues to burn. If you pour more and more butter or clarified ghee into it, the fire can never be extinguished by putting more butter into the fire. It's a famous statement here. Therefore, Vyasa says, this parinama dukkha is something that we should all try to achieve. But it's not easy. Now, this parinama dukkha helps us to evolve in higher spiritual life. We'll describe that later. The second dukkha that the sutra says is tapa dukkha. That's mostly due to different actions that we perform in our life. With strong desire, whatever we do, that action produces a modification which becomes tendencies and impressions and memories, and these memories become pain and pleasure, and again this leads to different actions, and these tendencies and impressions get accumulated in our mindset. This becomes samskara dukkha, which is found in all people. So what is samskara dukkha? It's a very interesting principle here. Whatever we do in our life, consciously, any action that produces an impression, and that impression comes back to our mind in the form of memories. Memories may be painful or pleasant. Both types of memories can be harmful. If the memory is related to a pleasant experience, we continue to do the same action, we produce those impressions. If the memory is unpleasant, painful, then we want to avoid it. The most important point is all these memories and impressions, it's called vasanas and samskaras, they get accumulated in our mind stuff, which is called karmasaya. And this karmasaya actually constitutes our character. So one important method to avoid many of the problem is whenever we do something, we should remember that action doesn't end there. Its consequences are not purely visible consequences or something that we experience right now. The consequences could be felt later, according to yoga system, if not in this life, even the next life. Some of very strong tendencies and impressions that we cannot normally explain in the light of our actions in this life are memories and impressions deposited in the karmasaya. It's like a huge bag, a vessel, in which all these memories, tendencies, impressions are accumulated. Now, when an external object presents itself, or when we find ourselves in a situation, in an environment, external situation, which is conducive to the re-emergence of negative or harmful tendencies, then mind suddenly throws up, projects these harmful tendencies, and we may be tempted to repeat those actions again. So these tendencies get reinforced, they become stronger and stronger, and this creates samskara dukkha. So the commentators will give one important method, advice to spiritual seekers, to all people, not only spiritual seekers, to all people. Try to do good things. Try to think good thoughts. Try to remember good thoughts so that in this bundle of karmasaya, there are many good, positive, healthy thought currents which are deposited there. So, whenever there is a pleasant, happy, desirable external stimuli, external circumstances or conditions, these good actions, good ideas, good impressions, good memories will come to the surface of mind stuff, and that will help us in spiritual life. That's why we feel sometimes great relief when we do certain things. If you listen to a prayer, if you listen to some good ideas present in lecture, if you meditate, if you talk to some people who give you useful ideas, and if you go home, you feel mental relaxation of little, for at least temporarily, you feel a huge burden is off your shoulders. This feeling comes because you have some accumulated good tendencies and impressions in your mind stuff, karmasya. It has connected itself with these new, fresh invigorating, refreshing ideas that you got. It could be when you read a book. It could be when you watch a good movie, mind you. Good, useful movie that is helpful, that activate our good tendencies, good impressions, good memories that we have accumulated in our karmasya. Then what happens? You feel relaxed. On the other hand, if you watch certain other things, if you read certain books, if you listen to certain terrible things, then you become more confused. You lose whatever peace you had in your life. It disturbs your mind. So disturbance is always due to this conflict. Some unhealthy impressions and tendencies that we have accumulated, if not in this life, in the past life, any time, suddenly it gets reactivated. They get reinforced. And then what happens? Our mind gets disturbed. So, this samskara dukkha relates to all past memories, impressions and things like that. Impressions left by previous experiences. This samskara dukkha. So samskara dukkha relates to past life. So samskara itself means what? Something that we accumulated in the past life. Past life and in this life also. But just before we, I mean it passed. It passed, not necessarily past life, in this life also. And parinama dukkha relates to future. Because when you really can feel this parinama dukkha, which as I said earlier, only yogis could do that. Only wise person could do that. Then what happens? You can avoid the real experience or the really painful experience in the future, because you understand the imperfection of all these things, their true nature. And then once you understand the imperfection of worldly pleasures and worldly enjoyments and worldly experiences, then naturally mind goes after something which is not imperfect. You recognize the imperfection of worldly enjoyments only when you have a glimpse of a higher state of life which is not imperfect. Otherwise, you won't recognize the imperfection of the imperfect. So, it relates to the future. And tapadukha is also related to karmasya. It is present in all of us. So, these are the three dukkhas that are to be eradicated. That's what Patanjali says. Parinama, tapa, samskara, dukkhehi, gunavritti virodhacha, dukkhameva, sarvam, vivekinaha. Then also there is a changefulness of experience. You know, sattva-guna, rajo-guna, tamo-guna, mind is always in a state of flux. So, this disturbance in the state of mind, changefulness of experience, anguish, all these, and vasanas, all these can cause dukkha. And it can also be caused by the conflict of gunas. Conflict of gunas is again related to the conflict of past memories and samskaras that we experience. So, this is an important subject that we had to remember. A few important statements from different commentators gives additional light to many of these ideas. One statement is there, that is again from Vyasa. Yaccha kama sukham loge yaccha divyam makha sukham trishnakshaya sukhasyede narhata shodashim kalam. It's a very interesting statement. He says, the sense pleasure obtained in this world and the higher pleasure obtained in the higher spiritual level of consciousness do not amount to 1/16 of the bliss derived from the destruction of desire. So the point is this. Suppose you get all your worldly desires fulfilled and then you want to go to heaven. Suppose you get continuous, unbroken succession of enjoyable experiences, pleasant experiences. Still, that enjoyment will not be 1/16 of the real joy that comes out of complete cessation of desire. So desirelessness is the greatest level of, greatest stage of blissfulness. That's the meaning here. So desirelessness. So Patanjali also deals with this subject. How to become desireless? Remember, this is cannot be very popular subject in our times. How can we become completely, become free from desire? Now, the first stage to become desireless is to sublimate our desire. To reach a higher dimension of desire. Along with a desire for worldly achievements, if we can also have a desire for understanding the true nature of these worldly achievements, then we'll have a desire for something that goes beyond worldly achievements. So, there is such a thing as a sublimation of desire. Buddha also said, you know, Trishna is the main cause of the problems. One cannot all of a sudden get rid of all desires. Suddenly we feel our mind just gone blank if you get rid of all expectations and plans. So the first stage is to sublimate desire. So Vyasa says, Yeccha kama sukham loge, yeccha divyam makha sukham. So divyam means divine, the divine pleasure, the divine enjoyment. What is that? The enjoyment that you get, that you derive, when all the desires are completely washed off. This is a very important statement. Now, we will do the next subjects. So, of course, we will have discussion later. So, the first sutra deals with the three dukkhas, that is parinama dukkha, samskara dukkha, and tapa dukkha, of which parinama dukkha really means the ability to understand the imperfect nature of all enjoyable experiences, which enables us to slowly sublimate our desire, which leads to a state of desirelessness. This is the fundamental principle. Now, next sutra is Heyam Dukkham Anagatam. Now, what is that to be got rid of? The thing to be got rid of is the suffering which is yet to come. So, the yoga enables you to avoid problems that we may have to encounter in future. That means the suffering which is yet to fructify is to be eradicated. So it's very important that yoga promises the eradication of only the sufferings of future lives. But suffering of future lives, remember, includes total eradication of the causes that create problems in our present life. So that's a very important thing. Once we understand the true nature of our mind and how our mind functions, then we get an explanation of some of the mysteries that we, or mysterious experiences that we go through in our present day life. And that effectively destroys many of the problems, remedies many of the problems that we are facing today. For example, and that's again, it is mentioned in the commentators. Suppose we have a problem that we go through in our everyday life. After reading the sutras, we suddenly recognize the fact that this is caused by a possible experience that we have gone through in if this life or in previous life. That connection, that explanation remedies the problem. Explanation always or is an answer to the problem and remedies the problem. The problem becomes an acute problem when we do not know why and how that problem really occurred. So, those who understand the nature of samskara dukkha, for example, how the accumulated impressions in the mind stuff create certain tendencies which are not desirable, but which we cannot get rid of. That's the main problem. There are many things that we want to get rid of. There are many things that we want to achieve, we want to practice, we cannot practice. There are many things that we want to avoid, but we cannot do that. But reading the Patanjali system or properly understanding the system, when we try to, and when we recognize the fact that maybe this particular obsessive tendency that you cannot really get rid of may be rooted in this fundamental cause. It must have occurred sometime in this life, previous life. The moment you realize the fact, this problem appears to be much lesser problem. That's the real benefit of yoga. So that's why Patanjali says, Heyam Dukkham Anagadam. Literally it means the thing to be got rid of is a suffering which is yet to come. But you can avoid future problems only if we avoid that the problems that we are facing now, which are rooted in the past causes, which is caused by past experiences. So that is the second. So we have to remember, you know, in the Indian school of medicine also, there is Chaturvyuha, is the, you know, Roga, Roga Hetu, then Arogyam and Bhaishyajam, Ittevam, Idam Abhishastram, Chaturvyuhameva. So Vyasa makes an interesting statement that is very interesting from a medical point of view. Yatha Chikitsa Shastram Chaturvyuham, Rogo, Roga Hetu, Arogyam, Bhaishyajam, Ittevam, Idam Abhishastram, Chaturvyuhameva, Yatatha Samsara, Samsara Hetu, Moksho, Moksho Upaya, Iti. Very interesting. It's related to Ayurveda. In Ayurveda, Indian, ancient Indian school of medicine. There are four fundamental elements in Ayurveda. One is illness or disease. Second, the cause of the disease. Often, in Ayurveda, they treat not only the disease, but also the person. The third one is health. The fourth one is remedy, treatment. These are the four fundamental pillars of Ayurveda. So Vyasa says, just as in medical science, yatha chikitsa shastram va chaturvyuham, just as in medical science, there are four fundamental principles. So also in yoga, there are four fundamental principles. One, these worldly experiences. Second, the cause for these worldly experiences, the state of imperfection, sorrow, that is dukkha hedu. Third one, liberation, moksha. That way, yoga chitta vritti nirothaka, Patanjali will define yoga in the samadhipada. Yoga is nothing but the cessation of modification, the race. And the fourth is the way, the means for mokshopaya, liberation. More like Buddha's Chattvari Arisatyani, Four Noble Truths. Now, once we understand that some of the problems, some of the state of imperfections that we are encountering now might be caused by something that must have happened to me earlier. So once we are able to connect these two, establish a link, that link solves the problem. Or the problem becomes much less of a problem when we are able to establish a link between the effect and the cause. So now the ultimate goal is to become a wise person or a yogi. Once you become a yogi, what happens? You would be automatically able to avoid many of these experiences that cause problems. So Vyasa again says, Akshipatra kalpohi vidvaniti yatha urnatantu akshipatre nyastaha sparsena dukhedi na neshu gatra avayaveshu. Something very interesting. Suppose something, a dust or an insect is about to fall into your eyes. Through reflex action, you can avoid it. So the mind of a wise person who understands yoga becomes as sensitive as the eyeball. Even a particle of a cobweb is enough to cause pain to the eyes, whereas it doesn't affect the other part of the body. So yogi becomes so sensitive, and because of this ultra sensitivity, he develops a reflex faculty, he develops the faculty of reflex action to automatically avoid problems that cause the mind to waver, the experiences that may cause problems to the mind. So the practice of yoga gives us this unique faculty or efficiency to watch our action, to watch our mind, and develop a natural reflex action or a power to control and regulate the functions of our mind and thought currents. That's the real meaning of this verse. So now we'll have interaction. So we have more than 10 minutes, so you can ask questions. The next sutra deals with heya hetu, meaning the cause of suffering, that we'll discuss later. So you can have a free discussion, those of you who are interested in this subject. Many of you may not have, some of you at least may not have fully understood some of the Sanskrit statements, so you can ask me to explain further if you are interested. A yogi realizes, recognizes the imperfect nature of all these things. He doesn't reject them. So once you reach that level of refinement to recognize and understand the imperfect nature of all these worldly things, you don't need not necessarily run away from the world, but you'll be able to live in this world as a wise person. A yogi doesn't run away from the world. As I said, no, he can look at all these experiences, including his own life, with a degree of non-attachment, as a subject, as a witness, not as a participating person, not as a participant, but as a witness. So this ability to look beyond, even while living in this world, going through all this, gives him this wisdom, both ways. The wisdom gives him or her to look beyond, and when he is able to look beyond that, gives him the wisdom. Both are interrelated. Yes.
So Swami, as I understand it, you said, I mean, understanding the cause, that means, as I understand it, understanding the cause means understanding we are the cause of our present suffering, leads us to realize that we have to change our actions in our present life if we want to get out of that cycle of freedom.
In fact, that realization automatically gives us the ability to restrain ourselves in certain circumstances. It restrains, it controls, it regulates our actions and thought currents. When we understand that we are ourselves responsible for all this. So that's why yoga doesn't recognize, it does recognize an Ishwara or a God, but it says the God is not a person who gives you the highest spiritual experience on a platter. There are many, there are some sutras where Patanjali refers to many great yogis of the past who have reached this level. So once we are able to link between our present situation, our actions, thought currents, everything, and when we are able to find a cause, a past link, then it enables you to exercise more restraint and self-control. That's what happens. See, yoga philosophy doesn't accept the principle of God's grace the way it is understood in devotional philosophical systems. So there is one sutra, Ishwara Pranidhana Dva. There is a sutra is there, you know. So please remember, yoga is not an agnostic or atheistic system. It's a theistic system. In the sense, it accepts the Vedas, it accepts the existence of God. But then, God is not one to whom you pray, whatever you may be, and God gives you what you pray for, or if you submit to Him. Not that kind of belief. You had to evolve spiritually. And even complete resignation to God's will is a great spiritual practice in yoga system. It's not something you do what we do whatever we want, then we pray to a God and God will support us whatever he'll be on our side. Not that kind of theistic system. There's a qualitative difference. So you find in the later you read this in the Yama Niyama, it comes in the Sadhana Pada when we deal with this Ashtanga Yoga. Yama Niyamas are explained here. So Ishwara Pranidhana Dva means you can achieve many of these great qualities, Yama Niyama, self-control, self-restraint, all these, I mean non-violence, truthfulness, all these, freedom from greed, all that. You can achieve when you resign yourself to God's will. But that's one way of achieving the highest spiritual qualities. Not that God gives you whatever you desire, whatever you pray for, no matter what type of person you are. No, not that sort of thing. This is a very interesting qualitative difference. We evolve in spiritual life and then we become spiritual. It's a very rational and psychological approach. So, any more discussion?
You said we evolve. Is the assumption in yoga, as it is in Vedanta, that ultimately we are that which we need to evolve to?
Yes, you know, in Indian philosophical systems, Vedanta deals with the last word in spiritual evolution, spiritual life. Yoga is a preparatory stage. Yoga is recognized as a means for reaching the highest level of spiritual fitness for non-dualistic experience by Shankaracharya. So Shankaracharya and many of these great Advaitic teachers recognize yoga. They do recognize yoga. He has written, Shankaracharya has written a commentary on yoga, Patanjali Vyasa, Vyasa Bhashi Viranam. But then his view is this, yoga helps you to achieve the highest level of mental purity, which automatically makes you spiritually fit for the highest non-dualistic experience. Yes. Oh, yes, you know, there is a sublimation of desire. In fact, the commentator, that is his Vyasa, who wrote a commentary on Patanjali Sutras, he says, the highest experience of joy, the highest experience of contentment is total freedom from desire. Because any kind of desire will prompt us to do something to achieve our object of desire. And there is always a possibility that we may not achieve all that we desire for. Which means there is scope for discontentment. I mean, unhappiness, pain, when we don't achieve all that we want to achieve. On the other hand, if we can get complete freedom from desire, there is no question of any kind of pain. But to achieve this goal, to begin with, we must sublimate our desire from worldly pleasures to desire for higher spiritual wisdom. So if you replace it, it is an automatic process. It is an easier process. That's true. Yes, the question is it ever possible, is it humanly possible to be free from all desire? That is a big question, it's an important question. So, it is really impossible for a beginner in spiritual life to be free from desire unless he wants to become. Not only that, his mind may go blank. In fact, in Bhagavad Gita, there's a great statement. Na buddhivedam janigid ajnanam karma sankinam. Lord Krishna makes a very interesting statement in the Gita. You should never teach a person to be completely detached all of a sudden. Those who are very ambitious, very active, they want to achieve worldly things, working hard day and night. If you just tell that person, oh, that person tries to practice complete freedom from desire or attachment, his mind may go blank. He won't be able to do anything. And psychologically, you may be disturbing him. So, Lord Krishna says in the Gita, you should never try to do that. Then what you should do? From desire, lower desire for worldly things, you can also have a higher desire for higher spiritual things. And slowly you will find this desire for higher transcendental spiritual values become more stronger and stronger. Your desire for worldly, empirical, everyday sense pleasures will decrease. That's how we evolve in spiritual life. So complete freedom from desire, all of a sudden, is impossible. So often when we read the scriptures, Buddha says, Trishna is the main cause of all problems. So you should be free from Trishna. It's all right for those who are highly evolved. But to begin with, you must have a strong desire to study what Buddha taught, what Vedanta yoga teaches, and make a thorough study and discuss and understand. And as your mind turns from worldly desires to this higher desire to study great spiritual philosophies and ideas which teach about desirelessness. So your desire gets sublimated, refined to a higher level, and then you will achieve a level of desirelessness. Well, no. In fact, desirelessness here means not considering, not looking upon worldly achievements as the only or the supreme goal of your life. The ability to look beyond the present, beyond today, beyond the empirical.
You said a yogi.
Yeah. He doesn't remove himself from the world. He lives in the world, but even when he's living in the world, he's aware of the limitations or the imperfect nature of all worldly things, and is able to look beyond, looking at the reality of the imperfection of worldly things. In fact, when you study philosophy, when you study theology, when you study higher mysticism, if you read a book, you get all these ideas, wonderful ideas, thinking of God, meditation God. It is true. But once we close the book, we are going back to the world. But a yogi, a spiritually elevated person, is able to retain this consciousness of the imperfect nature of these worldly things. Of course, he doesn't run away from it. But even in the midst of all activities, in the midst of doing all your duties and responsibilities with perfect dedication, complete dedication and zeal, still, somewhere in your mind, you realize, well, there is something higher than this. That thought is always retained by a yogi, by a wise person. But others are not able to retain this. For them, it's only one idea and it's gone. Again, they remember only when they read that book again or listen to the lecture again.
So all of our duties are because we want to abandon the lower. It's almost like you want to abandon the duties.
No, there's nothing lower or higher. You recognize things for what they are. See, you recognize all these everyday experiences for what they are. You don't condemn them, you don't consider them as belonging to a lower order. No, there is no lower or higher. You get a correct view, and when you get a correct view, you are able to place them where they belong. Yeah, please come.
I just thought the other day, because I have problems with that escaping and so forth, but I picture it as someone who, in the lower consciousness, sees a tree and they only see a tree if they can see it. They may be texting and not even see a tree. The poet sees a tree in a wider essence and connection.
Yeah. You get a more complete vision of the reality.
Yes.
So you don't consider something as belonging to a lower order, inferior order, something to be contemned, rejected, or run away from. No. You understand things as they are, and as you evolve, you get a more complete understanding, vision of the reality. So in a way, you do not run away from anything, because there is nothing to run away from. From where? From what are you running away? Exactly. We don't run away from anything. There is nothing to run away from. There is nothing to be.
You try to escape ignorance.
Yeah. No, well, ignorance, you can say, as you become more and more knowledgeable, as you become more and more wise, you get a correct picture, and then you recognize the great truth that there is nothing to run away from. When we get a complete understanding of it, what we consider to be the only thing, now we can consider, oh, it is not the only thing, there is a higher reality. You don't reject something, but you get a more accurate and complete vision of the same thing. So that's why there is a graphic description of a yogi in the second chapter of the Gita. So he says, a yogi is compared to an ocean where a number of rivers empty the waters of the ocean. The ocean doesn't say no to these rivers. The ocean doesn't go after the rivers requesting them, please bring your water. No. He remains unaffected. Apuryamanam ajalapradeshtam samudram apapravishanti yadut taddut kamayam pravishanti sarve sa shantim apnodi na kama kami. Who enjoys the highest peace? So here mentioned, there's a description of a yogi who has reached the highest level of healthy mindedness, mental balance, sthita prajna. The one who has reached steady wisdom is a yogi. So his mind is, or he is compared to an ocean which remains unaffected. It doesn't seek, it doesn't avoid. So it enjoys shantimapnadi. That yogi experiences the highest peace, inner peace and harmony, because na kama kami, not one who is full of desire. So here the yogi is not insensitive, is not inactive, he doesn't say no to things. That's why yoga should not be described as a negation or a dissolution of human mind. It is a creative, constructive expansion of human consciousness. So, frequently this may be misunderstood. So, there is one sutra in the Yoga Sutras, Yoga Chitta Vritti Nirodha. Nirodha actually means cessation. So, that may perhaps lead to some misunderstanding. Cessation here doesn't mean cessation of the mind. Cessation here means cessation of mind identifying itself with these various emerging modifications, external impressions and memories. And you reach that level of cessation of misidentification of your sense of what you are with all these emerging waves. You reach that level not when you dissolve your mind, not through a process of negation, but through a process of sublimation. You reach a higher level of spiritual consciousness, spiritual sensitivity. A yogi is not insensitive. He is sensitive in a higher spiritual sense. So that's an important, it's not a dissolution of the mind, not rejecting something, but expanding, reaching a higher level of consciousness when you get a complete vision of the reality. That's the idea. So we will conclude now. Next week. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Panamastu.